We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow. And we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a Week 10 edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast. The Steven Garcia of College Football Podcast. John, I feel like that one fits a little bit more than some of the other names that I've thrown out. Like, you and I think collectively really embody a lot of what Steven Garcia was all about at South Carolina.
Steven Garcia was like a living legend. Like, he's someone who I feel like Blue Mountain State probably like drew on his source material. Like, that guy, like he's someone who you get to the you know, mountaintop of the college football level. I think that they might have like won the SEC East while he was there, but
I think so.
That dude was about like the 80s quarterback lifestyle. Like, he wasn't first guy in the facility, last guy out. Like, he was
first guy in, first guy out.
Yep, first guy out and hitting up 5 points in Columbia. Oh, yeah. So yeah, major respect to Steven Garcia. I wonder how he's doing.
He's kind of another one of these names that I'm like, could we realistically get him on the pod? Like, it probably wouldn't take that much effort. He's probably one phone call or text away. So eventually we'll have to look into that. I'm fresh off a dentist appointment, coming straight from the dentist office, right to do this pod. My teeth feel great. My mouth feels great. I'm all loosened up. Grabbed a coffee immediately after the dentist appointment, which I don't think you're supposed to do. Might've canceled it out. But I'm ready to rock, man. I'm back in the RotoWire office for the first time in a while. So if you're noticing a tangible jump in sound quality, that would be why. But we have a lot to get to, looking at what happened across the country in a very busy week 9 in college football. I would say this is probably one of the top 3 weeks of the season in terms of, you know, big games across the country. A lot of moving and shaking when you talk about the first release of the college football playoff rankings, which came out earlier this week. We'll touch on those. But we should recap some of the big games. Then we'll talk a little DFS for week 10. We'll kind of use that as a vehicle to preview what's somewhat of a down week this week, at least relative to week 9. And then we'll hit a few kind of grab bag topics at the end. But Jonathan, where do you want to start? I feel like we'd be remiss if we did not start with the still unanimously top ranked Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, me, like, that my feelings on Florida are well known. So that game is always the one that I look forward to the most every single regular season. And you know, that this was a game that starts out, and as the day progressed, you know, I'm watching Michigan State, you know, while working, doing whatever on Saturday, but I'm like consuming all of that just to kind of like keep my nerves at bay, because I thought that Florida, the Anthony Richardson unveiling, plus the fact that Georgia had kind of made it clear throughout the later part of the week that it was going to be Stetson Bennett at quarterback. I was like, oh boy, like that. I still think Georgia wins, but this could be uncomfortable. And for the first 28 or so minutes, it was. But then Stetson Bennett throws the well placed, you know, what ended up being a coffin corner arm punt to get Florida pinned back against their own goal line. and stuff just started to unravel from there. You saw Nolan Smith just pull the ball out of Anthony Richardson's hands, kind of an homage to what Caleb Williams did to his own teammate the week prior. And things just started to unravel for Florida from there. So in just a 2-minute game span that, you know, in real time was about 20 minutes, the game went from being close to being like very, very much decidedly over. And you know, Georgia just kind of kept its foot on the gas, especially defensively in the second half, and was able to pull away to a comfortable lead. And really the only drama in the second half was whether Florida was going to keep their scoring streak alive or you know, avoiding being shut out streak alive. And they were able to do that. But yeah, Florida now, I mean, Dan Mullen puts his foot in his mouth on Monday, just saying that we don't talk about recruiting. And, you know, that's just not something that you want. And then it just stands in such stark contrast to that being like pretty much the first thing that Kirby Smart wants to talk about at any given time. And you look at the Twitter discourse on Saturday, and, you know, everyone pointing out how many 5 stars Georgia has in comparison to Florida and all this and that. And then for Mullen to make those comments, it kind of made a bad loss that much worse. So that prompted me to tweet out on Monday, like, this is precisely the type of Monday where I will just turn on Paul Feinbaum and just bask. And there I did.
I don't get a lot of those days, I would say, as a Jaguars fan or a Wisconsin fan. Those don't happen too often. But there's nothing better than like when your team has a great week, or when your team is, you know, 8-0, like the Bulldogs, just rolling over everybody. And, you know, you really don't ever have to hear criticism about your team. And like, even when it's warranted, it's no fun. I'm kind of a part-time Packers fan. These last 2 days have not been fun. You know, everything is just like negatively, you know, people are just hurling negative insults at your team. Nobody wants to listen to that. It's hard to get up for a podcast or get up, you know, to watch a TV show when you know it's going to go against what you want to hear. But I'm glad you've had the opposite experience. I was kind of checking in on this game throughout the afternoon, and I think you had a pair of tweets in the middle of the afternoon that pretty much summed up the entire game. So at 3:09 p.m. Central Time, you tweeted, "This is ungood so far." I believe that was around the time that Georgia was struggling to move the ball. It was 0-0 through the first quarter, like you mentioned. And exactly 1 hour later at 4:09 p.m. Central, you tweeted a GIF of a, looks like a pneumatic press crushing a Furby.
Yes, because that is exactly what that was. And yeah, I mean, both of those things were little capsules in time that summed up how I felt about how the game was going. And yeah, all it took was an hour. But yeah, Georgia just turned into a hydraulic press in that time. They went from ungood to hydraulic press in just 60 minutes. Pretty good.
Yeah, and in that analogy, of course, the Florida Bulldogs were the Furby that was getting crushed by the, you know, proverbial Dogs defense.
Sure.
Cincinnati, not exactly rolling over Tulane, 31-12, convincing nonetheless. Cincinnati, of course, comes in at number 6 in the playoff rankings. I think, you know, that's gotten plenty of run over these last couple of days since those were released. But ultimately, to me, not all that surprising that they put Cincinnati there. I think the main thing is, if you put Cincinnati in the top 4, it becomes a bigger deal if they inevitably fall out. Like, now I think you're still setting it up where, like, you know, they can kind of earn their way up there, or other teams ahead of them can tumble. I think putting them in that top 4 right away would have been setting the committee up for, you know, it's kind of some more, like, even more controversial situations as the weeks go on.
I actually tend to disagree a little bit, because these first set of rankings in particular, the first couple that we get in November, you know, they in the end, they don't really mean all that much to the very end of the season rankings. So I felt like the committee could have almost bought a little bit of public favor by saying, oh yeah, we had them in the top 4, like we gave them that respect, and, you know, our hands are tied when Oklahoma is undefeated, like we have to give them a playoff spot over an undefeated Cincinnati, that type of thing. So that, you know, they're behind a couple, or like 3 1-loss teams, I guess, with Bama being number 2, of course, and then Ohio State and Oregon checking in ahead of Cincinnati as well. And I think that the big thing about like the option A that you presented, where it's like, okay, Cincinnati like has its work cut out for it, they unfortunately just don't really have the schedule that allows them to do much to impress, I don't think, the rest of the way. Right. Like that. like you said, they took care of business against Tulane on Saturday, but Tulane was missing their starting quarterback. I think they were missing their backup quarterback as well. So they were down to their third guy. I know a receiver had to check in as the backup quarterback for that one. So I just feel like Cincinnati doesn't have the runway to make that impressive group of statements with big wins. And it does kind of run counter to what I was thinking as the rankings were being unveiled when they had Notre Dame at 10. And I was like, okay, that means that Cincinnati has a top 10 win. Like, that's going to be one of the more impressive ones of any team that's ranked ahead of Notre Dame at this point. But even still, it wasn't quite enough. So I just don't believe at this stage. Like, I think the stage is kind of set for Cincinnati to just be kind of locked into that next two out.
Yeah, it's a tough situation to be in because the committee has essentially said you have no way to control your own destiny here. And ultimately, that was kind of always going to be the case for Cincinnati. You know, they were going to need some help, as any Group of Five team would, to climb into that top four. But I think that point was really hammered home, you know, coming in at number six here. Ohio State, Penn State on Saturday. This was I think, a closer game than most anticipated. I thought Penn State got a pretty good game here from Sean Clifford, going over 350 yards in this one. At the end of the day, though, like, Penn State cannot run the ball at all. I mean, 29 carries for 33 yards in this one. Another, you know, rough day for Lovett and Noah Kane, who just really has not been able to get anything going for the most part this season. But Penn State able to move the ball through the air. This was a 3-point game going into the fourth quarter. And Ohio State, you know, only winning this game by 9 at home. Not that Penn State's not a formidable opponent. You know, all their losses at this point, you know, are somewhat quality, depending on how you view that 9 overtime Illinois loss. But I think, you know, despite losing this game for Penn State, you drop now down to 5-3. They're 2-3 in the Big Ten. I feel like this was a fairly encouraging loss if you're a Penn State fan. And ultimately, no one wants to hear that. But I expected Ohio State to make this one a little bit more embarrassing.
Right. I think, you know, when we were sitting here last Thursday, I thought that Ohio State was in that prime position, you know, with that game being in prime time, to just go ahead and really make their statement, you know, kind of plant their flag as the class of the Big Ten East. And yeah, like, Penn State had clearly been reeling. I mean, they lost to Iowa. That was just kind of a tough one. Obviously, Clifford gets hurt in that game, and then he's clearly not 100% against Illinois. But yeah, they ended up giving Ohio State a much tougher time than either of us anticipated, and easily covering that spread. So I guess the way you view it moving forward, if you're Penn State, obviously your three losses, you know, kind of take the legs out for your season, but the run game hasn't been great pretty much all year. I mean, this kind of reminds me, I'll throw a name at you, from my first year doing the Big Ten beat writing way back when, in like 2014. But like, this reminds me of the Penn State Bill Belton type of backfield where they just really could not generate anything. You didn't really understand why Penn State would have such a lackluster run game, but they just kind of did. And Kane was a big time recruit. So
yeah,
surprised to see him be as ineffective as he is. Maybe it starts with up front with that offensive line, but Penn State's recruited well. What this means going forward, though, is Clifford, for him to have the performance he did on Saturday, I think it sets up well for this Penn State passing game the rest of the way. We've seen some like high volume, low efficiency games from them in the passing game pretty much throughout the season. But I think this weekend against Maryland, and we'll talk about it more for DFS, but I think this really sets up nicely for like your Jahan Dotsons and your Parker Washingtons and even your Sean Cliffords going up against Maryland this weekend. So I think the passing game should click the rest of the way for Penn State, if Saturday's any indication.
All right, give me like 25 seconds on Iowa, Wisconsin. This Badgers team has been incredibly hard to figure out. They were favored yet again in this one. I didn't love the line. I thought this was going to be like the third or fourth time now that you know, expectations have been placed on this team and they were going to come up short. But I mean, back-to-back pretty impressive performances now by Wisconsin. I think this is now the signature win. Although, you know, Iowa has certainly had quite the fall over these last few weeks. So you kind of wonder, like, you know, how much of a quality win even is this at this point. But Wisconsin finally starting to look a little bit more like the team that I think we thought we would get. Still didn't really run the ball all that well in this game. I mean, they almost 50 carries as a team and barely got over 150 yards. But like, as we talked about last week, Braylon Allen continues to look like the guy there, just passing the eye test so much more than anyone else on that roster. Like, Chez Malusi carried the ball 19 times in that game and had no rushes longer than 5 yards. Like that is not Wisconsin football whatsoever. I think Braylon Allen is the better short yardage back and better big play back for this team. And here we are yet again with Wisconsin somehow controlling its own destiny and somehow looking like it might limp all the way back to another Big Ten title game to probably get beat and smacked around by Ohio State for like the 10th time in 10 years, it feels like.
Well, you know, you got to look out for Minnesota now.
I have no respect. I saw Minnesota re-sign PJ Fleck to an extension this week. I'm like, thank God, keep doing that. I have no respect for that man.
And I mean, why would you? You know, we talked about last week going in that the secret sauce for Iowa all year has been forcing turnovers. And my concern going into this game for Wisconsin was that they were near the bottom in turnover margin, and Iowa, of course, being near the top. But when you see, especially in a game that's going to be lower scoring, those turnovers can be all the more impactful. And for Iowa to lose three fumbles in that one, that really did kind of shift the course of the game. And of course, Wisconsin's defense bowed up. I mean, you hold Iowa to just 156 yards. No one's going to beat you that way. So I think it's a good win for Wisconsin. I think it says a lot for given the how down in the dumps the discourse was about Wisconsin, even just a few weeks ago, for them to kind of bounce back, knock Purdue, a ranked Purdue off, and then go ahead, turn around and knock off Iowa. I think it speaks to some resiliency here, because I think that what pulse I do have on the Badger fan base, but it was getting pretty slowed down there. So it's good to see Wisconsin bouncing back. And like you said, that they have the path in front of them, provided that they take care of business the rest of the way. And on Thanksgiving weekend against Minnesota to, you know, at least make it back to Indianapolis, even if you know what's coming on the other side of that is probably not going to be pretty.
All right, let's hit Michigan, Michigan State. Then we'll get to some DFS breakdown for week 10. Yet again, John, Michigan finds itself like one win away from maybe not being fully back. I think they need to bank some more wins and you know, do so consecutively in multiple seasons to truly be back to like early 2000s, Mike Hart, you know, Leon Hall type of Michigan. But it feels like this is, you know, so many times they're like, all right, if they get this win, they're going to really be in position to do something. And over and over and over, they've come up short, and it happened yet again, you know, blowing a late lead to Michigan State.
They did, and you know, some more special teams miscues against Michigan State coming back to bite you, because it really did feel like Michigan was in control, and then we kind of had this hectic hour leading up to the 3:30 Eastern kickoff. So I have the game on, and I'm paying attention, but I'm just sort of missing the big chunk plays, or I'm just kind of like catching on at the very back end of Kenneth Walker running away from the entire Michigan defense. But yeah, Michigan comes in there, and we talked about it last week, Michigan State having a pass defense that's terrible, but Michigan having it clearly, or at least at the time, no faith in its passing game. And then they come out and they hit these big plays to these receivers who a lot of people hadn't really heard of. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but you know, like the freshman that was wearing number one, his name's escaping me. He had a huge game. Michigan was doing what it wanted. They were in control of that game. And for Michigan State to kind of like engineer this comeback on the strength of its ground game is impressive, because that's usually not really the recipe for a comeback, because obviously that works clock against you. But, you know, credit to Michigan State. That's a huge win for them and for Mel Tucker for however long he's going to be there. And yeah, I mean, you have to respect Michigan State now, because I think it was fair to criticize Michigan State going into last week in the sense that yes, they'd passed the eye test to an extent and really kind of like taken a lot of teams that are bad to the woodshed like a good team would, but they hadn't really played anybody just yet. So for them to get that win over Michigan, I guess it's the second year in a row that they've done so. Impressive stuff from them. Obviously, I guess it's next weekend that they play Ohio State. That will really be the biggest of the tests here for Michigan State. But regardless, I mean, that's got to be one of the best wins that anyone has thus far this season.
Yeah, no question. I had hoped that, you know, Michigan would finally come through and I think make things really interesting and set up what would be an incredibly, you know, fun Michigan-Ohio State game at the end of the year. But yeah, like you said, I mean, it's actually not till week 12 that we get Michigan State at Ohio State. That'll be on Saturday, November 20th. So kind of setting us up for the ensuing Thanksgiving week. Right now, that would be a number three versus number five. So that one's going to be a ton of fun. But let's turn our attention to week 10. And like I said, we'll use this weekend's DFS slate as a guide to talk about all these games. A little bit of a down weekend relative to last weekend, relative to some of the other weeks that have brought us, you know, big time, like top 10, top 15 matchups. But there are a lot of, I think, like singularly intriguing games. We get Malik Willis going up against Ole Miss. I think this game has been circled for a lot of draft evaluators all year. I don't know if I made this clear, John, but I am 1,000% in on Malik Willis, like recklessly in on Malik Willis.
This is the least surprising thing that you could have told me, but I mean, it would have been strange. And you know, I would have like asked if it was really you on the other end of this phone call, if you had said like, you know what, I'm not sure about Malik Willis.
It's like Jameis Winston's body with Michael Vick's agility.
It's quite the combo. And especially with all of that in mind and playing at Liberty, playing for Hugh Freeze. And then Hugh Freeze, of course, having his homecoming in Oxford. This sets up to be a really, really fun game. If you look at this by the numbers, Liberty, on paper, again, has like one of the better defenses on this entire slate. But you have to just contextualize it in the sense that their schedule is about as poor as anyone has faced this year. Obviously, they have the loss to Louisiana Monroe, and that really kind of knocked them.
Hey, that's a really good Louisiana Monroe team. All right, watch it.
But that Louisiana Monroe team has a guy named Boogie Knight on it, so I will give you that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a market buy favor.
That's huge. That's huge. However, you know, again, you look at Liberty giving up just 173 yards through the air, just 107 yards on the ground, holding teams to 6.3 YPA and 3 yards a carry. That's impressive, but I don't think that those are really applicable numbers when you're going on the road to an SEC opponent, especially a quality one like Ole Miss. Ole Miss is really banged up here. So that is something to monitor here, but Vegas is still giving Ole Miss an implied total of 38. They're one of several teams on this slate, a 13 gamer that has an implied total north of 35. So there's a lot of offenses to target in this one. I'm not sure if I'm going after Matt Corral this week. I think that he's kind of like the poster boy of these banged up Ole Miss guys, and there's so many banged up pass catchers that they have as well. So one guy that I've been considering, if I want to get some exposure to the Ole Miss pass game, is a guy who did well last week, Jakor Pearson. He checks in at 4,900, had a big game a week ago against Auburn, just 4,900. I think that there's just because there are so many injuries here for Ole Miss that he still has that path to plenty of targets in the slot, and where he'll be running from, he'll present that easy target right off the bat. So you won't have to wait a long time for those plays to develop, and you know, Corral can get the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker. So I'll do a little bit more digging and see if there's any more value to unearth from these kind of lesser known Ole Miss pass catchers. Okay. But I think Pearson is definitely a nice like sub 5K option when you're wanting to target this Ole Miss Liberty game. And I think I'll do one Malik Willis lineup just kind of out of morbid curiosity, but we've seen Liberty on slates before. They don't really have a skill guy that's like a stud. It's interesting to see because, you know, Willis is continuing to put up some of the best fantasy numbers week in, week out, but it is kind of a no-name cast surrounding him. So I don't know how much exposure I'll get to like your DJ Stubbs of the world.
So what games overall are we looking to target here? Wake UNC has 76.5 over under. I mean, that Ole Miss Liberty game is up there, 66.5. Memphis SMU has a big over under as well. Where are you looking there? And then we could kind of roll that into, you know, which quarterbacks you're looking to target.
Yeah. So I think, this slate does kind of center around the Wake Forest, North Carolina game. You have two of the best quarterbacks in the ACC right now in Sam Howell and of course, Sam Hartman, who's just like playing at a totally different level right now. It's crazy. And, you know, Wake Forest undefeated to this point. Sam Howell, I think, accounting for like 11 total touchdowns over the last 2 weeks, just blistering stuff from him. So the question is, like, can you build a lineup that you like that stacks this game properly? Do you sink almost 20K of your 50K salary cap into going Sam Howell and Sam Hartman? I think there is a way to do that. But I think the problem is you can only get one of the premier pass catchers from either offense, or even just both of these offenses. You can probably only get one of them. And Josh Downs is the number one option. I think he's the top priced receiver this week, checking in at 8,700. It's, you know, that's tough, especially when you can drop down 1,500 and get A.T. Perry, the number two receiver for Wake Forest, who's been doing extremely well. Jaquari Robertson at 8K as well, another alluring option. But again, you'll just have to find a way to hunt for value at the rest of your positions. But I think there is a path to doing a Hartman Howell lineup that you can end up, you know, liking. And I think Pearson, you know, from that Ole Miss Liberty game, I think is a way to do it, because, you know, you're looking for a couple of viable plays under that 6K or even under that 5K price tag. And then kind of lower level guy from UNC's passing game that I'm going to at least consider is Antoine Green. He's just 4,300. He had a big game against Notre Dame a week ago. I think that's a decent way to get a little bit of exposure to UNC and to stack this UNC passing game just a little bit more. Antoine Green, again, 4,300 on DraftKings is kind of like that value guy at North Carolina, at least from what I can see.
What are we thinking at the running back position? You got Kenneth Walker, who is very much in the Heisman conversation at this point. I think, you know, the big game that he had against Michigan, obviously the signature game for him, dating all the way back to week one, you know, when he burst out with, what, 260 and four touchdowns against Northwestern. He's at 8,600 on this slate. Michigan State is at Purdue. You got Jerome Ford at Cincinnati going up against Tulsa. He's at 8,300. Trevian Henderson, 7,900 against that Nebraska defense. Where are you looking at the top of the slate at the running back position?
I will get to those running backs in just a second. I kind of left you hanging there. A couple other quarterbacks to consider: Sean Clifford, again, 6K, going up against Maryland. Gary Bohannon, 7,700 going against TCU. I think TCU is totally falling apart right now. Obviously, like, for a guy like Gary Patterson to get fired, that says a lot. I mean, he's built that program basically from the ground up. And then, as you alluded to, that Memphis SMU game is going to have a lot of interest. I can't quite get behind the Memphis passing game right now, just because we got a banged up quarterback situation with Memphis's quarterback. So you do kind of have some concerns there, but I do like Tanner Mordecai at 9,000 checking in this one, because, yeah, like I said, Seth Hennigan banged up with a hand injury. That's obviously tricky for a quarterback, but I do think that SMU's passing game particularly does well. But as far as running back is concerned, before we get into the premier guys, and again, this isn't just through red and black glasses, but anytime Missouri's been on a slate this year, you've had to look at the opposing running backs. And this week, Missouri goes to Athens. You see Zamir White checking in at 7,100. He did well a week ago, but I would imagine that Georgia, given that they're 38.5-point favorites in this one, they probably don't feel the need to use him too much. Kendall Milton's still banged up, so I like the pairing of James Cook and even a Kenny McIntosh. I know McIntosh didn't get a lot of run last week, but he's 3,900. I think he's the guy that Georgia leans on in the second half to just kind of run the clock out. So I do like that pairing from the UGA backfield. But looking elsewhere at running back, I mean, Kenneth Walker is the engine of the Michigan State offense, even if Michigan State has a pretty healthy passing game for their own right. But do like Walker at 8,600. It's just you will kind of have to sacrifice the idea of going for one of those high-priced quarterbacks. I think there's enough value at running back this week to where I won't have a ton of Kenneth Walker or even Jerome Ford. Trevion Henderson, I would be interested in, and Kyren Williams as well, going up against Navy at 7,700. That's pretty interesting. But I like Abram Smith. His price didn't jump too much after a good game last week against Texas. He's 7,300, converted linebacker, and he really runs like it. They were talking about that a lot on the Baylor broadcast a week ago. But Minnesota, I'm interested in their backfield pairing because we saw another season-ending injury to a Minnesota running back. I don't know what's going on with them, but Bryce Williams going down. So that sets things up for Marquise Irving at 6,300. And then at a 5,000, Kai Thomas. You do have to bake in the fact that they were able to run all over maybe the worst run defense in the country in Northwestern a week ago. So take it for a grain of salt. But I think Minnesota still is a run first team. They are at home, and Illinois doesn't have a particularly strong run defense in their own right. So keep that in mind as far as attacking that Minnesota backfield is concerned. And then Brandon Thomas, touching on that Memphis SMU game again, he didn't have a lot of carries last time out. They've had the bye to maybe get healthy here a little bit. And if Hennigan is still dinged up, you kind of figure that Thomas and the Memphis run game gets a little bit more heavily featured here. And, you know, that'd be a good strategy for Memphis to just kind of keep that SMU offense off the field as much as it can. So Brandon Thomas, another guy to consider at 62.
Yeah, I like that call with the Minnesota backfield. Kai Thomas back-to-back 100-yard games, but something just rubs me wrong about you know, you recommending two Minnesota running backs who are not named Marion Barber and Lawrence Maroney.
Yeah, I mean, I felt wrong saying it. You know, this even goes back to who was their great running back from a few years ago? Had like a cup of coffee with the it was David something.
David Cobb.
Yeah, that guy was just like a classic, another Big Ten running back out there. But those days are behind us now, unfortunately. And, you know, that again, they've had just so much attrition there with Mo Ibrahim going down and Trey Potts. And now Bryce Williams has been the bummer as far as that backfield goes. And, you know, I wonder if Marion the Barbarian has any eligibility left.
I wonder that as well, as long as he's not playing in that game against Wisconsin at the end of the Big Ten calendar. All right, let's look at receiver. Josh Downs, highest priced player on the board. He's at 8,700. UNC goes up against top 10 team in Wake Forest. You'd be hard pressed to find anybody who's been as consistent as Downs. He did have his 7-game touchdown streak snapped against Notre Dame, but still had 10 catches on 12 targets, 142 yards in that game. He's been up over, 21 DraftKings points in 7 of 8 games so far. His worst game of the year was 8 catches, 53 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, he's been ridiculously consistent for UNC, but a lot of good options at the top. We saw David Bell somewhat bounce back after a really down game against that number one ranked Wisconsin defense in terms of yards allowed, not in terms of scoring. I don't know what team leads the league in scoring defense.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, who knows? Could be anybody. You can always pick between or maybe go with both of the Ohio State guys, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. So where are you looking at the top of the board at receiver?
Yeah, Downs is definitely really interesting. I think that if picking from that trio of either Downs, Ja'Cory Roberson, or A.T. Perry, if I end up going with Downs, or I think I will try to get at least one lineup with Downs. I mean, the guy just has such consistent target volume. He's really the only guy that Sam Howell has consistently trusted over the course of this season. Back-to-back double-digit reception games. That's obviously huge for DraftKings, where there's PPR scoring. So I don't have an argument against using Downs this week. And I think that this game will live up to that high-scoring billing that it's getting. You know, the total kind of dwarfing anything else that's on the slate. I mean, it's almost a full touchdown clear of anything else as far as the total is concerned. So you do figure that the Downs is going to have another huge game. It's just, can you find that value elsewhere? I always have a hard time. I always pick wrong, whether it's Olave or Wilson. It's you know, the bane of my DFS existence this year, whenever Ohio State's been on a slate. But you know, I think both of those guys have the green light, and both of them kind of have those decreased price tags, at least relative to what we've seen at other points of the season. I like Jahan Dotson. I know I was talking about Penn State's passing game earlier, and I think that there's just enough other like kind of alluring names there, whether it is Ja'Cory Roberson, whether it is Josh Downs, Calvin Austin, a good option, of course, one of the more consistent producers in college football this year, but I'm off that Memphis passing game for this week. So I'll pass on him. But Dotson has seen kind of like Josh Downs level target volume. It's just the efficiency hasn't been there, but I think the efficiency spikes back up this week against Maryland. And I think Parker Washington down at 5K is another way to get a piece of that Penn State passing game. I feel like the SMU receivers are also pretty cheap this week, whether it's Reggie Roberson or Rashee Rice. I like both those guys a lot. Both of those guys priced down under 6K. So if you do think that SMU holds up its end of the bargain as far as putting points on the board, especially through the air against Memphis, which, I think that they will, then you definitely have to consider those two guys. And I think that it's very easy to stack Tanner Mordecai along with Rashee Rice and Reggie Roberson both. And then going back up, I do like David Bell at 7,400. Saw a lot of targets last week. I think he had a season high in targets. I think that he's also someone that can take advantage of the aforementioned poor Michigan State pass defense. So I definitely like him a fair bit this week. And then if you want to go way down the board, look at those Georgia guys. If Georgia treats this one like they kind of want to test some things out in its passing game, then I think we could see potentially a bounce back from Brock Bowers. He's still priced up a little bit, but I think that he could get going a little bit. Jermaine Burton is another guy. He played 10 snaps last week, didn't really do anything on those 10 snaps, but you know, this is a totally different story against Missouri. So I do kind of wonder, I think a lot of the conventional wisdom is going to use the UGA run game. But from what I've heard around UGA parts, I think that there's a chance that they try to, at least in the first half of the game, try to get that passing game going, get a little bit of mojo going into that Tennessee game coming up the following Saturday. So Georgia has plenty of cheap options. Darnell Washington, 3,900. LeBron James-sized individual. That's going to be hard for Missouri to contend with as well. And then I mentioned Jakor Pearson earlier on from Ole Miss, 4,900. I like him too.
All right. Fantastic breakdown as always, brother.
Thank you, sir.
Let's take a more, zoom out a little bit, a more holistic approach to looking at week 10. What other games that we maybe haven't hit on have piqued your interest and will be catching your eye on Saturday?
So it's not on this slate, but the Tennessee-Kentucky game, I think, is really interesting to kind of establish who the second-best team in the East is. I think one of the more kind of surprising under-the-radar results last week and one that kind of helped springboard Miss State's ranking that this past week is Kentucky falling to Mike Leach and the noted candy corn haters in Starkville. So Tennessee, I like the money line on them. I think they might be playing – a little bit better brand of ball right now than Kentucky is. And Kentucky, they kind of live on the margins in the sense that if things don't go exactly according to their game plan, like they kind of only have one way to beat you. I think Tennessee can beat you in a couple different ways. So I do like that one. That's a pick 'em at some spots, but in other places it's Kentucky favored by like a point. Color me interested in Tennessee this weekend.
Okay, I like it. Let's take a look at the CFP rankings, by the way, which came out earlier this week. Georgia 1, Alabama 2, Michigan State 3, Oregon 4, Ohio State, Cincinnati. We touched on the Cincinnati situation, but I know you threw a lot of thoughts out there on Twitter as these were released. Overall thoughts, are you okay with a one-loss team in Alabama sitting there at number 2, kind of positioning itself to potentially even sneak into this with a second loss to Georgia, if that were to come to fruition? Still so much, like you said, I think every year, and there's a reason that they release these, like I think they want the overreactions, but every year, you jump to conclusions that even as recent as a week or two later, end up, not really mattering. Obviously there's still a long way to go, but anything other than Cincinnati, not making that top 4 really jump out to you?
Yeah, I guess, seeing a one-loss team in the first set of rankings be the number 2 team is a little bit surprising at first glance, but, it is Alabama. If anyone's earned that benefit of the doubt, it's them. My pushback is that, what really is their best win so far? And also, if you're going eye test, has Bama really passed the eye test this year the way it has in other years? Basically since Jalen Hurts took over in 2016, I wouldn't say so, but at the end of the day, I do feel like that, Bama is going to end the regular season with just one loss. And, you know, you can't really quibble too much with it. It is Alabama, and I would like Alabama to beat Michigan State straight up, Oregon straight up, and probably Ohio State straight up. So that's fair. I thought the committee got it right in putting Michigan State in the top four. I think that that win last weekend, being an 8-0 undefeated team at this stage of the year in the Big Ten, earns you that playoff spot. We'll see if they can hold on to it. And they also got it right in putting Oregon ahead of Ohio State. It shows that win for Oregon in Columbus does mean something. So even though Oregon has done a lot to kind of give back the public favor that it earned in that week two victory, I still think that Oregon still deserving, even though that loss to Stanford really, really stinky. And then I guess the other kind of statements that the committee made, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this too. Oklahoma being 8 and Wake Forest being 9. I feel like Oklahoma, that seems like a little bit of an empty gesture, like a little bit of like an empty challenge from the committee, in the sense that, like, okay, this is our first set of rankings. We're going to put you down there. Like, shame on you for not destroying Kansas. Right. But at the end of the day, an undefeated Oklahoma team that wins the Big 12 championship is not being left out of the playoff. Like, it's just, you know, I'm sure Oklahoma fans have already thought this all the way through, but there shouldn't be any sort of like visceral, like, I can't believe this type of reaction, because as it stands, it does kind of make sense to have the top six teams ahead of them, and Michigan's played a tougher schedule and on balance probably looked a little bit more impressive than Oklahoma. So it's all right. I think that this, what Oklahoma's rankings, they only have up to go from here, provided that they don't blow it. And I don't think that they will at this stage. I've changed my tune on them.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that really stands out outside of Cincinnati and outside of Alabama, is seeing a 9-0 Oklahoma team that, you know, has plenty of playoff experience. It's not like they've ever had issues getting in, being all the way down at 8. And especially, I think it's not necessarily that they're ranked 8th. It's that they're ranked right behind Michigan, which just lost, you know, 2 days prior. So I think it was kind of a like proverbial slap in the face to Oklahoma, you know, for not maybe taking care of business and not passing the eye test to the degree that it should have, especially early on. But like you said, I mean, Oklahoma is going to have plenty of opportunities over these next few weeks. You know, they have Baylor coming up, you got Iowa State, you have Oklahoma State. They're going to have two ranked teams on their schedule to try to bankroll a couple of those wins. And, you know, even if those teams that they're counting on for quality wins in Baylor and Oklahoma State, even if those teams were to falter before those games, like, at the end of the day, I don't think you're keeping an undefeated Oklahoma out of the playoff. You know, I don't think it's necessarily Oklahoma's fault that, like, the Texas win doesn't really look like much in hindsight. And, you know, Nebraska, not that anybody thought they were going to be great, but they've probably been even worse than some people thought. You know, like, they're still playing a Power Five schedule. And even though it hasn't looked all that impressive, I think I'm fine with them being 8 right now, but inevitably they're going to work their way up.
Yeah. The November schedule that they have, I believe they're on bye this week, but yeah, ending it out with, you know, what kind of turned into be the next three best teams in the conference, is a really good proving ground for Oklahoma. Right. So we'll really get a feel for what they actually are here by the end of the month. I think it's fair to put them there. And then the committee just showed it, what it really thinks about the ACC this year as well, with an undefeated Wake Forest checking in at 9.
Yeah. Yeah. That says a lot right there. Back to your Alabama point real quickly. I don't know how I feel about them being 2. It's like, at the end of the day, I still think they're probably the second best team. And it's one of those situations where, like, I mean, you're a Georgia fan. Like, if you're Georgia, would you rather, if it's like a one game, you know, let's say it's a national championship game, who would you rather play, Alabama or Michigan State, Alabama or Oregon, Alabama or Cincinnati? It's like, you'd rather play any other team but Alabama.
Yep.
Even if it feels like Alabama's underachieving by their standards, like, to me, it's almost like a less severe version of what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs right now. Where, like, there's a reason that they're not, like, even though they played terrible for what, like, 4 out of 5 weeks at this point, like, they're still going to be favorites. You know, they're still, like, they still opened as favorites against the Packers, even when the Packers looked like they were going to be healthy. Like, there's still this kind of unspoken, like, they can get it back at any point type of belief. And obviously Alabama has not hit the skids to the degree that the Chiefs have, but I think there is something with Alabama where they've just they've built up so much clout over the last decade that they're always going to get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. So in the end, would it look better aesthetically to have a undefeated team at two and then
right.
Bama at three? Like, yes, but at the end of the day, like the question you asked is the one that matters, which is, you know, who would you rather play, Alabama or anyone else outside of Georgia? And the answer is always anyone else. So
yes.
This is still a Bama team that I think is, you know, they're coming off the bye this week. They're 4 touchdown favorites against LSU. I think that they're going to just kind of bury LSU this week and just kind of start rolling. What I will say though, and that, you know, we can kind of end it on this one, but this Auburn game coming up for them at the end of the season, and it's in Auburn, it's on the Plains. I wouldn't be completely shocked if Auburn won that game.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah. I mean, 2 years ago happened and you know, obviously that was a post Tua injury. So Mac Jones wasn't fully formed yet, but you know, I think that could happen. But again, the only way that truly matters as far as who plays in the SEC championship game is, and this is probably the game of the weekend, in my opinion, A&M and Auburn. What, I mean, have you looked into this one at all? Do you have any thoughts on kind of how Auburn's been playing? And then A&M, you know, they're coming off the bye, so they've been kind of laying low and they played after Alabama. They had like South Carolina and Missouri, so they haven't really had a chance to like capitalize on the spotlight that was put on them.
Right. Auburn's been one of the most difficult teams, I think, to get a read on. And you know, I don't really have a great lean on this one specifically. I mean, it's A&M -4.5 playing this one at College Station, over under for the record 49.5. So it should be a really good game. I don't think any result would really surprise me. I mean, we've seen Auburn take down a pair of ranked teams in the last 2 weeks after getting kind of pushed around by Georgia a few weeks ago. You know, they had that loss to Penn State early on. I thought they actually played pretty well. That's when we thought a lot higher, I think, of Penn State at that point. But I mean, Texas A&M has the best win in the country right now, beating Alabama, right? I mean, nobody's beat Georgia. So the best win in the country belongs to A&M. And even though it maybe seems a little bit fluky with how that game ended, they still got it done. And, you know, they put up, 79 points over their last two games against Missouri and South Carolina. So they've certainly passed the eye test, at least on offense.
Yeah, they obviously quarterback is an issue for A&M.
Yep.
But at the same time, like they kind of have the skill guys to smooth that over, and they have a hell of a defense as well, as we saw in that Alabama game. So even with that defense in mind, though, I do like the over at 49 in that game. And then I think Auburn could go ahead and win that one. But I think I'm more comfortable in betting the total there, but very, very excited for that game. And then just like a couple other bets I like for this weekend, Michigan State -3 at Purdue. I like North Carolina to knock off Wake Forest. So UNC -2.5. I like your Badgers -12. Going on to the banks and playing Rutgers. I do like the way that Wisconsin's playing, and I don't know if Rutgers has much left at this stage. And then one other one, kind of gross, but people have fallen so far off of the scent of Florida State. They really gave Clemson a good game last week. That doesn't really mean a lot.
I don't even know what that means anymore.
But it, you know, it's something, I guess. Yeah. And then so them, I think they're slight home underdogs to North Carolina State. So you're getting plus money on the money line. I would take the Florida State money line.
Yeah, NC State -2.5 on the total in that one, 56. So it should be a really fun one. All right, man. Looking forward to another great week in college football. I will chat with you again this time next week.
Beautiful.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to buyoptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at buyoptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.